You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, alongside Maddie Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Get to the Common Fan website, www.commonfan.co. Subscribe on YouTube, like this episode, follow all the social media accounts, sign up for the free newsletter, and generally keep up with all the fun and frivolity of the Common Fans. We're a little late in getting an episode out this week. For that, we apologize, Common Fans. But, you know, there's been a lot going on. And Scott Frost doesn't want to talk about Nebraska. Did anybody see that?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get to that. We have to get to that. We're the Common Fans. You know we have to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to talk a little bit about Brett McMurphy's article about Scott Frost last week and the interview that he did. But first, let's start with some positive Husker news. Emmett Johnson drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs. Matty O, isn't Matty Jr. a big Chiefs fan?
He is. Yeah, he was pretty excited. He was playing baseball at the time that they drafted Emmett, but he was delighted to find out after his game that Emmett's going to the Chiefs.
That seems like a good fit for him. Yeah. I don't even know why. It just seems like a good fit.
Well, you know, you think about Andy Reid and his history with running backs with similar skill sets to Emmett, and they've generally been pretty successful. You know, you think of like a Brian Westbrook type back with the Eagles, you know, a guy that can good runner, can also catch some passes. It could be a good move.
There you go.
Geoff, were you glued to the NFL draft?
I did watch quite a bit of it. I'm not going to lie to you. The first round, especially. I mean, Notre Dame, you know, I don't know if you guys, speaking of running backs, two in the first round. Two. I think they had six draft picks altogether.
Nobody cares, Geoff.
No.
I mean, nobody cares.
No one is tuning into this going, I wonder how many players Notre Dame got drafted.
Well, you know, Jadarian Price, Jeremiah Love, had a pretty good day. That's all I'm going to say. I'll leave it at that.
Always curious, has anyone seen a comp for like what, I don't know why it's just, oh, there it goes. Set the sign. I was legitimately going to bring up how much he might be making. 4-year contract worth approximately $4.73 million. This is just when I typed, this is according to SpotTrack, according to Google, essentially, if that makes sense. Good for Emmett.
Yeah.
Good for him.
The reason I thought about that is because I thought to myself after he was drafted, like, what could he have commanded if he had come back for one more year, either at Nebraska or somewhere else? $2 million, $3 million, for one season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have no idea. I'm not an expert on the college market, and it's a constantly moving target. But you just wonder if that ever crosses guys' minds. And it's just a different game now in college where even if you think you can play in the NFL, those rookie contracts, you know, he's going to be making around $1 million a year, which is nothing to scoff at, more money than most people will make in their lives, $4 million. But just kind of interesting to think about. Like, could you have made $3 million for 1 year of college, gotten drafted in the second or third round, and then had an even bigger payday? I don't know. Yeah. Maybe the flip side is, which we've talked about before, is the more tread running backs get on the tires, they have a limited shelf life, especially these days.
Right.
It's very rare to see guys lasting, you know, 7, 8, 10 years as running backs. And so maybe he wants to capitalize while he can. And it's also just the dream of the league, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's no secret, dude, that like he was the guy on the team last year. Had he stayed, I'd be a little bit more confident about maybe where we're going and headed this next year. The one thing I did notice, though, I actually did some research before this episode, guys. I did research.
No, you didn't.
And nobody believes that, Jeff.
I looked back all the way to 2016 just to get some comparisons about how many people we've had drafted, or draftees. I think we had like 20, Nebraska might have had like 26, and compared to Notre Dame had 66. I won't even get into like Ohio State.
Sorry, I didn't want to hear it.
This is the second. We're 5 minutes in.
No, well, then
5 minutes in, and that's the second.
Can you compare it to somebody else other than Notre Dame? Can we compare it to somebody else?
I'm just saying, clearly, that's the issue with Nebraska football right now. It's the talent disparity. If we're not making playoffs or making a run at a national title, you could blame a lot of it on coaching, but clearly we're just not getting the dudes that we need, or we're not developing the dudes that we get to get to the NFL. The talent, that's the problem. We're not making inroads in that regard, in my opinion.
I think you're right, but I think that's a byproduct of the coaching. Like that's a byproduct of who's here running things. And the revolving door of coaches too. That doesn't help you get, you know, top 2-3 round potentially draft picks in the doors of your college program if you're firing coaches every 3-4 years.
Yeah.
So interestingly, I'm glad you took it that way, Jeffrey. For real, honestly, I'm not even being sarcastic.
Segue. I call that a segue in the biz.
That's a
voice.
Segue. Yeah.
So a couple Show different data points. Friends. John Bishop, who. As a longtime radio guy, tweeted, since the 2012 NFL draft, only three Power Four schools have failed to have a top 50 overall pick, and Nebraska is one of them.
Oof.
Shocker.
Yeah.
The other two are Kansas and Virginia.
Yeah.
Not exactly company you want to keep when it comes to college football.
No.
And then Brandon Vogel, friend of the program, had a recent newsletter focused on the draft. He pointed out this year's draft was the ninth of the last 10 in which two or fewer Huskers were selected. And he did this really interesting exercise. Of course, Brandon designed his own formula because it's Brandon Vogel. But he basically created a formula where he assigned draft points for Husker football players selected over the years. In his words, it's super simple and absolutely imperfect, better for looking at a lot of years than for understanding the nuance of a few. So basically, what did he say? He used a modern day 3-day draft as a rough cutoff for points. So a player selected in the top 30 of the draft got 3 points. A player selected in picks 31 to 100 got 2 points. Anything after that received 1 point. So we won't go through the whole thing. It's really interesting. Everyone go to counterread.com. Check out Brandon Vogel's great stuff. He does such a great job. Always like an interesting angle, like something like this, where he creates his own formula for assessing the Huskers' success in the draft. He's always using data, always got an interesting point of view. So first of all, subscribe to the Counter Read paid subscription. Okay. Don't just add your email address. We love Brandon. We're not even getting paid to say that. Here's the other thing. So the Devaney era career draft points average 8.2. Okay. Again, you get players are assigned 3 points for any players drafted in the top 30, 2 points if you're drafted 31 to 100, 1 point for anything after that. So not only are you going to get points for higher draft players, so more talented players, but also the more you have, the more points, right?
That's good. I like that method.
Yeah, right. So Devaney, the average, he looked at every year of each coaching tenure, but then he averaged it out. Devaney, the average is 8.2. Osborne, it won't be shocking to anyone. This is the best of anyone.
Get the average numbers up.
10.3. Osborne, there's so many studs. And I feel like people come to like the Roger Craigs of the world or some of those guys, some of the offensive linemen. There were a ton of great offensive linemen who played for Osborne. So many great defensive players. Who played T.O. and then and went on. Anyway, things, not surprisingly, things kind of dipped with Frank Solich, 6.3. Okay. Bill Callahan, who shall not be named very often on this program, was the exact same as Solich, interestingly, 6.3 as well.
Wow.
So while he was an abject failure as a coach on the field, he was a pretty good recruiter.
He was indeed. Can't believe you even said that, PJ. You actually complimented the man.
No. Well, holy shit. I guess they kind of.
Yeah.
Things just keep getting worse, guys. So then in the Pliny era, the average for the Pliny years was 4.9. The average for the Riley years was 2.7. The average for the Frost years was 2.2. And so far for Rule, the average has been 1.5.
Oof. Zero. 0.0.
Mr. Blutarski.
Rules, Huskers have had three players drafted over three seasons, including an offer in 2024, which broke a decades-long streak. Part of this is from Brandon. Part of this is me ad-libbing. Broke a decades-long streak of Nebraska having at least one player drafted, if I recall correctly. Or did Frost break that? I can't remember. All the records have been broken in bad ways. And interestingly, all three of Rule's draft picks were Frost-era recruits.
Yeah.
So, very interesting.
The Pelini numbers are shockingly low to me if you consider, yeah, like, he had Sue, which, Levante again, David. Was a Callahan recruit. Levante David, I think somebody, I saw somewhere, he was, doesn't fit that narrative of John Bishop's tweet because he was, like, the 51st pick or something like that. Okay. So, he was in the 50s, which would be second round.
What era did Randy Gregory play in? I forget.
He would have been in the 2013 or 2014 draft.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think. 2013 draft.
Those are some interesting numbers, fellas.
Here's another, reading a little bit more from Brandon. And I think this is a good place to go from here, right? Obviously, this is not good enough. Obviously, it wasn't good enough during the Frost or Riley eras. The Frost thing always shocked me a little bit. I always thought, look, we all drank the Kool-Aid. We all thought we were coming back to the mountaintop. But I remember in my more level-headed moments thinking, I don't know if he's going to win us five national championships, but we're going to be competitive again. And with the offense that he runs, he's going to bring in so much speed and so much talent. I remember thinking that, yeah, like he was going to bring in just because he had this reputation. He had the high flying days at Oregon and UCF. And yeah, I just remember thinking we're going to have so much talent. We're going to have speed running all over the field, whatever. So maybe it was a talent issue for Frost. Maybe it was a development issue with that coaching staff. We've discussed that many times on this program. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Frost and Riley eras weren't good enough. Rule has not, you know, we're still in the Rule era. So I guess an optimistic spin would be to say,
look at this.
He can still improve. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But Brandon takes it and says, what's a realistic expectation for Nebraska's draft performance in today's game? How many players picked would be enough to produce wins at a level most would accept? And then he goes on to say, it's not what Ohio State does. Nebraska has never recruited that well over a length of time. It could be what Iowa does, maybe should be, but it hasn't been of late. Sticking with my own scoring system here, this is Brandon talking, I look to the Pelini era. His teams never won fewer than 9 games, were maddening and exhilarating often at the same time. And yes, eventually Husker fans got tired of that too, but today's Husker fans are in a different place. Pelini's roughly 5 average feels reasonable to me.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, feels doable. I think that's probably fair. I think, look, even in the heyday, and I would assume if we broke these numbers down even further, we could probably have Brandon on to talk about it sometimes, that 10 point whatever average is probably skewed by the 90s teams, right?
Yeah, sure.
That we had. So, but for a lot of years, for some really good teams who maybe won the conference and didn't play for, you know, were in top 10 or 15, things that we would all celebrate and be thrilled with now. Brandon's right. We didn't out-recruit Ohio State. We probably did not recruit Oklahoma, who was paying people back then, by the way. But Nebraska's like, we've always been that developmental program. So you got to have both. You got to find your studs from Florida or California or wherever, but you got to have that development aspect too. I think that's what Husker fans assumed they were getting with Matt Rhule, was that development piece of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it remains to be seen. I think it remains to be seen if that's what we got. Matty, yeah, you look like you have something you want to say.
Yeah, I just think that, like, I like the idea, the concept of Nebraska, and we've talked about this before at the meet, at like the real media level, and we've talked about it a little bit, of Nebraska identifying as a developmental program. I just worry a little bit now in modern college football if that can work.
Right.
When you've got, and we'll talk about this too, about the money thing. But like, I don't know if you have time at the big boy level to be a developmental program. And I'm just spitballing here, but like, you know, it's like, well, let's still bring in the high school guys and give him 3-4 years and then, oh, look out. Like, I don't know if like when your fan base is as starved for success as ours is, mm-hmm. I don't know that telling them to be patient and wait a few years is the best plan of action. And I'm just speaking out, spitballing again here, but like, I just don't know if that fits in big boy, Big Ten,
yeah,
CFP contender football right now. Hey, like, let's be a developmental program. Like, and what are our goals here? If the goals change, if the goals have changed and we're trying to be at seven, eight wins a year and be content with that, then that's fine. Let's be developmental. But we've talked forever about the standards here, and we can't let the standards change where we want to get to, even though it's been a while since we've been at that level.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with that, MO. Just the speed at which things happen now. And again, where every episode we talk about this sort of thing, it's going to be compared to Cignetti in Indiana. We've already acknowledged that. But in this era of college football, patience is kind of out the window now. I think it's win now, ask questions later. And you don't have time to develop these players. Like, you just, people plug and play now. And even if you are a developmental school, who's to say you don't have somebody here for a couple of years and then they jump ship to go somewhere else? You develop them, do all the work, and they wind up somewhere else anywhere. So, yeah, I agree with Matt. Developmental schools are few and far between now, in my opinion. It's pretty tough.
Well, like, the idea of, like, hey, let's be a developmental program and just fill in the pieces here and there when we need them. Like, that sounds great. Like, that we've mm-hmm. talked about that, too. It's like, yeah, let's be developmental, and then every year in the portal, we'll just fill in the pieces. But how good are the pieces that you're putting in? Like, is it a guy that played sparingly for 3 years at another Power Four, and now he's, you know, hoping to get more reps? Like, are those the guys we want?
Yeah.
So the counter to this, guys, would be, I'm going to use Iowa as an example here, and I hate doing that, but Nebraska fans could look at Iowa, who they are a developmental program. Are they not?
They are. I agree.
100%, right? Mm-hmm. But they every inch out of they maximize every inch out of their roster, and they consistently churn out, especially on the offensive and defensive lines, they consistently churn out draft picks and punters. I think Husker fans would look at that and say, we used to do that better than everybody,
mm-hmm.
and we have more resources and we care more than Iowa. So we should be able to do that part of it and also then supplement the roster with way more talent than they ever get,
mm-hmm.
and throw all that into the blender,
mm-hmm.
and be head and shoulders better than them and better than Minnesota and better than all these other second-rate Big Ten programs. And that's what we're not seeing, right? We're seeing neither, really. We're not at the top end. We have some talented guys. We love our players, but we're not at the top end when it comes to talent, and we're not exceeding really anybody on development. So we're kind of mid at both. And that's why we've been mid on the field.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I agree.
You can look at our roster for the last 10 years, the last decade, and say, how many of these guys would start at Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State? You know? And my guess is there's probably not a lot, if we're being honest.
And a lot, somebody should do an analysis of where Nebraska players, when they've hit the transfer portal, where they've landed. Yeah, we got a few. Nate Borkircher went to A&M. Congrats on getting drafted.
Yeah.
And we've had a few like that, but the vast majority of them end up going down a level or mm-hmm. two.
We're out of football completely. Some of those guys.
We apparently, the fans were too much. We gave them the Scott Frost treatment and they had to leave football altogether.
Is this another segue?
A little teaser. No, not yet. Not yet. We'll get there. I think with the more natural, we were going to talk about Frost sooner. We are still going to talk about that. But the more natural pivot right now would be on the money thing that you noted, Matteo. Because that's been in the news recently as well. Matt Rhule has given a number of interviews recently. This is from the Omaha World Herald sometime in the last week. So basically, reminder, background for the common fans. Universities can pay athletes. The cap right now is $20.5 million, and that's across all your sports, okay? Called revenue sharing, okay? And the revenue share, you could give it all to football, you can give it all to basketball, you can give it all to bowling if you want. Jeff would love that.
Hell yeah.
Jeff was, were you on the Pius bowling team, Jeff?
No, I tried out. Didn't make it. I got 3 free games of bowling though. It was the best return on an investment ever. Tried out. Didn't make it.
You didn't make the bowling team?
No, of course not. I didn't make the bowling team. I threw a great ball. I don't curve the ball. I don't do anything like that. You're the right bowler, though.
How many people make the bowling team? How many people make the team?
I think it's pretty tight. Like, I don't think it's like a huge number of people.
They have cuts for the bowling team?
Absolutely. You got to average over 200, I think, baby. I'm pretty sure. What's your guys' average? What do you guys use? What's your high game?
That's disappointing. Not a bowler. Weren't you always?
I bowl on leagues.
In a bowling league? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so you still couldn't make it, huh?
Yeah, I didn't make it.
You know what, Jeff?
What's your high game, guys? What's your high game? I want to know.
I'm a terrible bowler.
I haven't kept track.
I'm a terrible bowler.
Tell me.
Jeff, you're the man. You're the Teddy Roosevelt man in the arena. You know that?
That's right.
The credit is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena. I'm not going to read this whole thing, but everyone look it up. It's the best speech ever.
My high game's a 237. I just want you to know that. That's my high game. That's pretty damn good.
That seems pretty good.
Jeff, even at your worst, if you fail, at least you failed while daring greatly.
Me and a couple friends that you know, Hartman and Wanky, we were on a bowling league together. We won the championship in junior high. I've got a plaque. I've got a big bowling pin, decorative bowling pin. Yeah, I've accomplished a few things in my day, fellas.
Jeff. Your place will never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat.
That's beautiful. Thank you. I appreciate
that. God bless you for putting yourself out there on the bowling team. Anyway, $20.5 million revenue sharing number, okay? That's the number universities can use their dollars from their I assume it comes from the Big Ten media deal. That's my guess. It's not coming from taxes or student tuition. I know that much. It's coming from the athletic side of the house. Nebraska, I think like a lot of schools, I think Nebraska does 80%+ of that to football. They devote some money to probably men's and women's basketball and volleyball. That's my guess.
Start upping that contribution to the men's basketball team. Let's start getting that
right.
Okay.
Yeah. So then, per the World Herald, let's see. Business owners and deals with third-party entities are still key in how other schools are assembling rosters north of 40 million. This is where name, image, and likeness comes in, NIL, right? Mm. So Troy Dannon, athletic director, pointed out it's no longer legal for rank-and-file fans to simply write a check to an NIL collective that goes to a team. So I think, like, technically speaking, a player has to have a deal with Amigos or the car wash. Yeah,
like an endorsement.
But it has to be an endorsement, and they have to do something.
Combo meal.
They have to do something to earn that money. So they got to show up and sign autographs, or do a public event, or do a commercial, or have a Jeff Sims combo at Amigos, whatever the case might be. Right. Yeah. So, rules quoted. Those numbers are very. So this is back to the point. Schools are assembling rosters north of 40 million. So that's a combination of the revenue sharing dollars. Again, not all of which even go to football. So probably below 20 million that's going to football. So you're adding another 20 million plus from NIL deals, right? Those numbers are very real, Rule said. It's not made up. It's probably underestimated. Rule is spending 50% of his time in the offseason dealing with the financial part of NIL related to roster building. That's fundraising, brainstorming with donors on potential player deals, traveling the country, engaging wealthy fans. All coaches are, he said. Let's see. The more Rule can raise, the more current Huskers he's likely to retain after the 2026 season, and the more effective NU can be as it continues building a top 25 recruiting class. Money is becoming part of the conversation for prospects as soon as sophomores and juniors in high school. It's insane.
It's crazy.
And look, we can talk all we want about, you should commit to a school or you commit to a coach, whatever. We can talk all we want about that stuff. Money talks, baby. If you're 18 years old, and you're like, I'm not sure if I'm going to make the NFL, but I got a chance to make, let's not even do the most extreme deals. I got a chance to make 6 figures for the next 4 years and walk out of college.
At that age, yes.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars in a bank account. Even if you don't go to the NFL, like what a start in life, right? Yeah. What a financial start in life. Of course, most 18-year-olds are probably thinking about the number of cars they could buy or the big house they can live in or something.
Bugatti.
Like that. Yeah. Should probably be requiring financial planning classes for these kids as well.
Yeah.
But one thing I want to pick out a little bit, guys, or get your take on. So Rule gave this interview to the World Herald. There was another one. I think he interviewed with Damon. He talked to Damon, maybe some others as well. But he was basically out there saying, I think they must have asked him. I didn't see the whole thing. I just saw the clip. They must have asked him because he commented toward the end of last year, we have the resources we need now to compete and go and get better players, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then he made a comment to Damon like that basically it's constantly moving. It's constantly evolving. So I can say that today and tomorrow, Ohio State and Texas Tech and all these Alabama, all these schools with billionaire donors or whatever they might, whatever their situation is, they up the ante and they're paying. So school, basically it's an arms race. Schools are paying ever more for their rosters. And so you can never feel content.
Most meal delivery services promise healthy food, but look closer and you'll often find cheap industrial seed oils hiding in the ingredients. Forkful does things differently. Forkful delivers chef-prepared meals made with premium ingredients you'd expect at a great restaurant, from center-cut filet mignon to wild-caught lobster mac and cheese. And every meal is 100% seed oil-free. Instead of canola or soybean oil, Forkful chefs cook with extra virgin olive oil, avocado oil, and grass-fed butter, because better fats make better food. Meals arrive fresh, never frozen, with clear nutrition and ingredient transparency, so you always know exactly what you're eating. Restaurant-quality meals, real ingredients, no seed oils. Discover Forkful today at ForkfulMeals.com.
And I sympathize with Rule. The thing that jumped out to me about this World Herald thing in particular is just having to raise money to keep your current players on the roster. That's ridiculous. Like in the NFL, you have a 2 or 3 or 4 year contract. Most rookies get a 4 year contract. You have a contract. You don't get to hold your team hostage if you have a good season at the end of every season. I mean, maybe there's some outliers there where you can get renewed and you get more money if you have a good couple of years or whatever. But the point is, half the battle for Rule and for every coach is raising money to keep their current roster. That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like that's a tough spot for coaches to be in. And the fact that he's spending, it used to be you spent all your extra time recruiting. Now I assume he's putting his staff on that because he's spending all his time raising money. This is like a politician. Politicians spend all their time raising money. And most politicians,
like being an accountant.
Most politicians hate raising money, by the way. I bet Rule hates doing this. He's good. He's a glad handler, but raising money is not fun. It's not fun. Right. Here's the sticking point I want to make, though. He's right. We're getting outspent by the big boys of the world. We've got to figure out how to make that up with a combination of paying for better talent and developing better talent, like we talked about at the beginning. But I bet we have more NIL dollars than Iowa does. I bet we have more NIL dollars than Minnesota does.
Yeah.
I bet we have more NIL dollars than UCLA does. I bet we do. UCLA's athletic department's a mess. Maybe I'm wrong on that because LA money, but all of those teams, I guarantee we have more NIL dollars than Northwestern does.
Yeah.
All of those teams, wait, have we lost to Northwestern in the Rule era?
Anyway, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Point being, like, yes, you're right. And also, he's got to put this out there into the world because he needs people to see it and decide to give more money, right? I totally get why he's doing what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
We're not turning this into another Hammer Rule session. But I just think fans are at a point where we're 3+ years in. We're basically a 500 program under Rule. And we're not even beating the teams always. We're not always beating the teams that we're outspending. And if that development piece is going to be part of it, to your point, Matteo and Jeff, you guys were talking about we need instant success, whatever. Well, it's also been 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
If we were developing people, they should show up.
On the two deep.
On the two deep by now, right? So I think there's a little bit of like fan fatigue, like we've been talking about all offseason, but specifically with this money conversation. Yes, I hope Warren Buffett writes a $1 billion check every year. I hope somebody steps up or business owners step up. If I had the means to do that, I would do it, right? All of us would. We had endless millions. We would be paying for better Nebraska players, right? That is part of the equation. We cannot, if any fair assessment cannot discount that piece of the equation.
Right.
But We're not a poverty program either. We have enough to be competitive. We have enough to be a top 25 program. I think that what all this comes back to is what this is why year four is so critical for Rhule. He had the opportunity for the year three leap, that schedule set up so we could have been a top 25 team. We could have gotten to 8, 9, 10 wins, and he didn't do it. So the urgency is all that much more now. And so I think fans will be much more tolerant of this conversation if we get there in the win column.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of coffee today. That's a lot of thoughts. What do you, what do you guys say to that?
Go ahead, Matteo.
I think you're spot on. It's, I don't know. I think that the timing with that too, when we're talking about, and again, this isn't coming out of my pocket or your pocket, TJ, your pocket, Jeff, or the fans' pockets. But the timing of that with the $600 million stadium renovation, and then we're talking about also, oh, by the way, we also need money every year for players. And that money, that's amount's going up. It's just, it's like when you go to church on Sunday, and I'm not picking on the Catholic church here, but I will a little bit. Yeah, every time you go to church, you're putting your regular Sunday tithing, right? Well, then it's like every couple of months, like, oh, now we're fundraising for new windows. Okay, well, I just answered this call for this other thing. And we just finished that. Now I got to start a new one.
Usually it's a multi-year capital campaign. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. But what I'm saying, like, it's when there's that, and you said the word fatigue, and I think that's the perfect word for this. Like, I have fatigue of hearing about how much money we're spending, even though it's not coming from me, how we have all the nice facilities, have all this stuff. All I want is a football team that wins and plays good football. And I want to be proud of that. Like, that's all we're asking for here. So, yes, I think this fall is extremely critical for Matt Rhule and staff, extremely critical for the football program, because you're talking about all these things, and now we want more money, and I got to get more money. We don't have enough money. We have less money in Ohio State, less money in this guy, that guy. Like, win some games, and then maybe you can get better players for less than you would have paid if you sucked.
Like, or maybe more money will come in.
Or maybe more, yeah. And that is the case. You get more money. When you win more games, you get more people spending money in Lincoln, coming to games, more people buying merchandise. You get more money from the conference now, if you
pizza,
get far enough in the CFP.
Runs like us.
Oh, Jeff, God dang it.
It's expensive as hell.
Winning can solve a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about raising all this money for a football program that doesn't probably deserve the money that people are being asked to give. Like, so, yeah, this fall, next year, they got to do something to make us think like we're on the right track. These things are going well. Like, have a Fred year. Have a Fred Hoiberg Nebraska ball year where, like, holy crap, they're picked 14th and they finished, what, second in the conference? Like, we need something like that.
Yeah,
and donors giving more money doesn't provide that in the immediate.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, they'll provide, give them money to get better players and all that, blah, blah, blah. Like, overachieve. Schools are doing it all over the country every single year, are overachieving. Why not at Nebraska?
Yeah.
Right. Right.
We're going to, Owens, in comparison to your church analogy there, the old second collection basket, I used to always drive me nuts. Like,
yeah,
we got it the first time.
I like it when they
understand.
I like when they do the second collection. Don't really tell you why.
We're sending that around again.
Yeah.
Now, hey, we noticed you didn't put me in the first one. Here's the second one. We noticed you didn't put me in the first one. Here you go.
I'm gonna get struck by lightning when I walk outside here to get my lunch.
Yeah, you are.
I always feel bad when the basket's coming around and people are. I do it online. You can do it online now. Right.
What?
I want to do it online.
Yeah, write a little note.
Yeah,
I give online, Matteo. Yeah.
Well, I do it online.
Do they take IOUs? Can you put like an IOU in the basket? Redeem it a later date or something like that.
Jeff, this is Father so-and-so. We've got you with IOUs totaling $20,000. We're just wondering when you're going to pay those.
The Langenberg family has $28,000 of IOUs to Cathedral of the Risen Christ. Mr. Langenberg, can you either pay these IOUs or just stop putting them in the basket because there's no money coming in?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. You're cutting out. What did you say?
This is a perfect way to transition to Scott Frost, guys.
Isn't it?
Oh my gosh.
We're talking about money. It's related. There's money involved. And
can I add one more thing as it pertains to just paying of players? And we talk about the coaching staff all the time. We're ultra critical of whoever's in charge at that time. So right now it's Rhule. And again, we're not bashing him. We're just making our voices heard. But I, as a common fan, I don't know, guys, in this era, I have fatigue of the players sometimes. The fact that, TJ, you brought it up, holding teams hostage year to year based on trying to maintain that roster. I get it. They take whatever money they can get, their young kids. It makes it exhausting to be a fan of players now, in my opinion. You can still be a fan of the team, but look at the reaction that we have to Dylan Raiola going to Oregon. Do you go online and just read the comments from Husker fans on there? And I really do believe it's because of the amount of money that's pumped into this now and things don't work out. Fans, I think, have had it with NIL as well. I mean, the hate and vitriol I see towards players now when they leave after you write them a check is 20 times worse than what I ever remember seeing as we were growing up. I know you didn't have social media that's prevalent, but it does seem like a lot of people have just soured on the athletes, not just the coaches themselves, in my humble opinion.
Well, I think it's because they're getting paid, right? Like it used to be like, hey, these are college kids. Don't give them a hard time. Well, hey, that college kid made $3 million last year. So I think you can probably handle a little bit of a weight joke or a little bit of a having a big belly joke. You know, he's crying himself to sleep tonight.
Is that just a random
pillow.
Example, Matt?
What are you talking about, Matt? I don't know.
If it was me, I got a little bit of a weight problem. I got a little bit of a belly. If it was me, I'm not talking about anyone specific.
No, of course not. Of course not.
For the record, he looks great. Dylan. I'm talking about Dylan.
The whole thing was I wanted the Dylan fat thing to come up. That was my segue.
I think those images were definitely doctored.
Geoff, you raise a good point. And it's the ones that are out there and obnoxious about it who have never done anything on the field are especially annoying. But at the same time, I don't blame the kids for gobbling up as much money as they possibly can in the short window that they can do it. You never know if you're going to get injured. You never know if you're going to make the NFL or not. You have a small window to make potentially life-changing money, and it's not illegal. The kids are not breaking any law. Mm-hmm. I don't blame the kids.
Right.
I get why it's annoying, and I get annoyed by them sometimes, but I don't really blame 18 to, these days, it's not 22 these days. It seems like guys are there until they're 26, but 18 to mid-20s young adults for trying to capitalize on their situation and make as much money as they possibly can.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, though, Jeff. From a fan perspective, yeah.
It's hard to get behind the players now. You can cheer for the team, but I feel like most people just don't have, there's a misplaced, trust. Like, you just never know if one of these people is just going to bail on you at any time. It's hard to buy in on the athlete themselves. You cheer for the end now more than anything, you know?
Well, yeah, and there's like the childhood, you know, fan in me that like never wanted to miss senior day. Because like it's the last game your favorite players are playing in your home stadium or your home arena, and it's sad. And like, you know, I'd get misty-eyed. I'm never going to see, you know, Grant Wistrom play in Memorial Stadium again, or Levante David or whoever it might be on senior day. It's emotional. They're hugging the coach and they're tears and the coach is misty, and that's gone. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much gone. You know, there's a few guys here and there that have started at one school and finished at one school, but they are few and far between now.
Yep. 100%.
All right. Let's finish with Scott Frost.
Okay. Fair enough.
Brett McMurphy from On Three had an article last week. It opens like this. Scott Frost, because it all comes back to Scott Frost.
Always does.
Head coach at the University of Central Florida, for those who don't know. Scott Frost has cage dived with great white sharks off the South African coast. He climbed the highest summit in the continental U.S. and also traversed one of the country's most dangerous mountain ranges. He hiked the Grand Canyon rim to rim and even ran with the bulls on the cobbled streets of Spain. But nothing is more difficult than coming to grips with the only failure of his professional career. Quote, I don't want to talk about Nebraska at all. End quote. Frost told On Three. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. McMurphy goes on to talk about sort of Frost, like Nebraska's recent history, and then how Frost fit into that and how it's sort of unlikely that he would have shown up and failed as bad as he did is basically the point that he makes. This is way further down in the article. I want to read a couple of the points here. Heck, Frost couldn't even escape Nebraska on the Grand Canyon floor. Let's see. This guy is he's a friend of Frost. Remembers the Grand Canyon trip with Frost in the summer of 2018. That was months before Frost's first game as the Huskers coach. We're at the bottom of the Grand Canyon and there's this Nebraska fan and she's all over him, wanting to get photos with him, said the friend, laughing. A few years later, this guy and his wife were watching a Nebraska game and Frost almost looked like a different person. I would see him out there and my wife would say, Scott looks like he's aged. He's stressed. Anyway, last thing, I want to move on to Frost's quote. I do not want to talk about Nebraska at all, but I will say, what I will say is in 2017 at UCF, we'd win a game at home and Ashley and I, and it's his wife, Ashley and I, would drive a mile off campus somewhere and nobody would really bother us or say anything to us. There's a freedom that allowing you to just try to excel and not worry about the outside noise becomes, because it could be crippling at times in certain places. It's the exact opposite here. It is a really good place here for the players to just to be student athletes and try to be the best they can be and not worry too much about scrutiny and pressure. And the same for the coaches.
Huh.
I love the, I texted you about this. The comparison I saw on that tweet was saying, you're correct, Scott Frost. Your multiple vacations were definitely easier than going to work and doing
your job.
That is not what a vacation
a
is.
Your incredible vacations to places that most people will never get to go.
Vacations are easier. They're supposed to be. They're relaxing. Like, it's not. It's the opposite of work.
I hadn't heard that about the Grand Canyon yet. That was before he even coached a game in Nebraska.
Right.
Like, can you imagine being such a dick that you're not willing to take a photo with a Husker fan that saw you at the Grand Canyon? Like, as a fan, you see the coach of your favorite team, you're thousands of miles from Lincoln, Nebraska. You see your coach and he's complaining about having to take a photo with you. I'm sorry. Like,
well, the other comment that I saw a lot, it's kind of similar to that, Matteo, was basically like, do you think it's easier in Columbus, Ohio?
Right.
Or Tuscaloosa, Alabama? Or any number of these places where big time college football happens. And look, maybe the big time is not for him.
Exactly. He is not. That's what I was going to say. Clearly, he's not built for it. That's just not the world that he needs to be in. Can I also say, I mean, why is he taking such stressful vacations? Can you mix in like a trip to Mount Rushmore or like to the Sand Hills? Like,
I don't know. Last
Stand? I don't know. Branson. Go to Branson, Scott.
My wife is different from me. When I vacation, I like to do nothing.
Yeah.
I want to be lazy. That's a vacation to me. I don't want to go run with the Bulls. That's not a
vacation.
I
had a quote tweet about this because I kind of quote tweeted Brett McMurphy's thing with Scott's quote. And I'm just going to, if I can just read it.
Let's be clear. You're quoting yourself? Is that what you're doing?
I'm reading what I tweeted because I felt like in the moment I am quoting myself.
You're quoting yourself.
Because they said, Brett had this tweet. It's, you know, but what I'll say, there's a freedom in allowing you to just excel and not worry about the outside noise because it could be crippling at times in certain places. So my response to that is UCF and Orlando don't care nearly as much as major college football programs. One, okay. So I'm content to hide out here. This is Scott. This is me speaking Scott's. So he's content to hide out there where he's free from any criticisms that would occur at just about any major college football program in Tuscaloosa, in Athens, in Ann Arbor, in Columbus, anywhere they're critical. They're critical no matter where you're coaching. Yes. If you're a big-time college football program, you're going
to
receive criticisms if things aren't going well. That's part of what you know, you get millions of dollars a year to coach football. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I get there's, you know, you're going to say there's all these other things that these coaches have to deal with now, like the fundraising and all that. But you're a lot of these states, like here in Nebraska, you're the highest publicly paid, your highest paid public employee of the state. Okay. You have an unbelievable amount of power. All right. Most people would love to have that, and they would just be willing to accept all that comes with it, even the negative stuff. You're like, okay, this is what comes with it. And you're just, he just can't deal with that. Like, I don't know why. Like, I don't know. It will always be fascinating to me how poorly the whole Frost experience went. And I know, you know, we've talked about it.
You know what I think? I think Frost listened to the episode about are Nebraska football fans part of the problem. I think he listened to that episode, guys. A fishbowl. Maybe it's true. Maybe it doesn't matter who you are. It just doesn't work out here anymore because we're too hypercritical and are just claws are into everything involving the coaching staff. What they do?
We can't expect to be one of the big boys and then like also just be like, hey, you know what? Leave coach alone. They're having a rough go of it. Things are been really tough. It's really hard to be a big time college football coach. No, a lot of people have a lot invested in this.
Yeah, and for us, it's our own personal identity. Compensated to deal with that pressure.
Right. Mm-hmm. Part of the job.
Jeff, you know what I thought you were going to say? You know what I think? Right. I think you should go back to Greenbow, Alabama. Okay, I'm going to say one more.
Don't get me started on Jenny, okay?
I'm going to say one more.
Go down that road.
She's the real villain.
She is.
I'm going to say one more thing that I don't think you guys are going to like, and I think I'm going to get some comments criticizing me in the YouTube comments, and I'm fully prepared for that.
Yeah.
I've told you guys this before. It's still complicated for me with Scott Frost, even after all these comments. So I told you guys before, like, he's Frost. He played at Nebraska, lost track of him. Then I remember I've told you guys this. I saw him on the sideline when he was Oregon's wide receivers coach breaking up the LeGarrette Blount fight. Remember LeGarrette that?
Blount. Yeah, I remember that.
And like, I was with my brothers. We were like, that's Frost. That's Frost.
Yeah.
So then like kind of started tracking him again. He becomes Oregon's offensive coordinator. He's a big name. He goes to UCF, has all this success. It made so much sense that he would come back to Nebraska one day. And then he does. And then we're all so fully invested in that for years to the point that we completely deluded ourselves, right?
Delude yourself.
Delude yourself, dummy. And because, like, there was just like years of, not to mention affection from his time as a player, and years of sort of following him and feeling invested in him and cheering for his success because, you know, in 2017, I probably told you guys this, Hudson was a baby and my brother Matt came to visit over New Year's. So early 2018 and Nebraska didn't make a bowl game in 2017 because Riley's last team went 4-8. And so we were watching UCF beat Georgia in the Peach Bowl or whatever bowl game it was. And we were going nuts watching that game.
Yeah.
That had nothing to do with Nebraska.
Oh, yeah. Same.
Except it had everything to do with Nebraska because he was about to come there. And so I read this article. There's other parts to it. Most, I would say a lot of it doesn't talk about Nebraska. And it talks about his future at UCF. And you know what I found the feeling creeping in? Kind of pulling for him again.
Jeez.
I know, it's so pathetic. It's so pathetic.
Since he left, put him backstage, Owens.
He's made multiple comments where he shirks responsibility and he blames other people for his failures and he doesn't even say the word Nebraska and he does all this annoying stuff. And we've talked about it on multiple episodes. I wrote an article where I was really irritated with him and I called him the golden boy and I criticized him, whatever, whatever. And you know what? I'm still conflicted.
Yeah. I don't get it.
You know, it's,
I don't want to see him fail. I don't want to see anybody fail, really. DJ. But also, like, it would drive, like, I've talked about this in the past when I think before last season, we're wondering how his team would do. Like, I just don't want him to do better than Nebraska.
No, I don't. I don't want that. And I certainly would never want them to meet in a bowl game and have us have the chance of losing. I don't want that.
Yeah.
But, like,
don't root for him. All right. Because you're going to
I was like, a few months ago, maybe like last year, a few months ago, whatever, I was kind of just over him, out on him. I read that article and I'm like, I might just keep one eye on UCF and see how he's doing this year. That's so pathetic. I know.
Anakin. Yeah. I know. You're being seduced by the dark side.
Anakin. This is like, I feel like I'm the guy.
Don't listen to Palpatine.
The girl wants nothing to do with it. It's over. And I'm sitting there with his buddies at the bar. I'm like, should I just call her again? I just call her? No, don't call her. Don't call her.
Yeah.
Pathetic.
Delete. Hey, TJ, delete Scott Frost's number.
Delete
his number. Block
it. Criticize away, common fans. Let me have it. Let me have it in the comments. I don't, I deserve it.
I'm sure there's a decent amount of people that feel the same way that you do.
I highly doubt that.
If you go by social media,
I'm a Husker football fan.
A Husker, always a Husker, guys. Come on now.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
All right, common fans, that's it for this week. We've got some fun stuff coming up. Stay tuned. We got a fun promotion where you can win stuff coming up.
Ew, yeah.
Hey. So we're going to kick that off. We're going to kick that off in the month of May. Very exciting. So we got that coming up. We got our summer series coming up. We got a lot of fun stuff coming up. It's almost May.
We're
getting closer and closer to football season.
Yeah.
It's time to enjoy Nebraska football again. All right. Any final thoughts, boys?
Jeffrey?
Go to Devil's Tower, Scott. That's a great vacation spot. Safe, not stressful. All right.
Just go lay on the beach. Just go lay on the beach somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
All right. Matty O, any thoughts?
No, you know what? I just want everyone to know I am happy with the St. Louis Cardinals so far. It's a rebuilding year.
Cool. All right, common fans. Matty O gets backstage for talking about the Cardinals. Just kidding. They're behind the Cubs though, as everyone knows.
Yeah, we expected that. That's okay. It's a long season.
Pretty good for a rebuild.
That's right.
Hey, common fans, be kind to each other. We'll be back at you soon. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.
Holy moly! Man, woman, and child did that. Put them in the aisles.
And Nebraska takes the lead. And the national championship is Nebraska's.